Well, my guest in the studio tonight has been a regular on the Australian jazz scene since 1990 and travelling much of the world. She's now based here in Sydney. She holds a Bachelor of Music in Jazz Voice from Adelaide University and is a regular at jazz festivals around the country. Meanwhile, her husband and drummer has delighted audiences for more than 25 years with his humour and dedication to sounds that swing. Equally at home, in a small group or a big band setting, his musical facility runs the entire spectrum, from traditional jazz to swing to bebop, R&B, soul and commercial jazz. Jackie Cooper and the Cat in the Hat, John Morrison, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
John, can I start with you, the eldest brother in the Morrison family, of course. The one question that you must have been asked many times, music aside, that is, you seem to have been able to maintain an excellent working relationship with your younger brother,
yep,
who obviously attracts most of the limelight. That's not the case with a number of musical brothers over the years. The Dorseys, of course, come to mind. Have you been able to maintain that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think music brought James and I together more than separated us. I mean, when we were younger kids, we just scrapped like normal brothers would. You know, I mean, me being the older brother, a regular pastime for me was to put him on the ground and sit on him and tickle him until he was sick, you know. I mean, older brothers do those sort of things. But we started playing in high school. And when we were playing younger than that, we were playing in brass bands earlier. But, you know, I didn't even talk to younger kids in those days. And as we came into high school, we shared an interest in jazz. And we were discovering, you know, Errol Garner, Oscar Peterson. And so we'd get these little groups together and any other kids we could find interested and just try and nut it out. And so it's interesting how music, you know, can do that. But we became much more collaborative about what we did. And of course, I sort of in my time later part in school and then early years out of school went into a flying career. And so we'd gone our separate ways again, although I still played regularly with James and on the weekend and various groups, and we played, you know, professionally together. And he went off was with Don Burrows' band, and we sort of came back again after a few years to form the Big Bad Band. And so the relationship's been really good. I mean, James is more envious of me than the other way around, which is quite strange. People sort of ask that sometimes, but he reckons he'd swap with me. I mean, I play with many of the great musicians that he plays with on the same stages, but he reckons I have to just deal with less. I can slip into the dark and have my own life, you know.
And we've got a nicer boat.
Yeah.
But so you've got to put the music above. Well, and it sounds like you do that. You put the music above anything else, business,
yeah,
relationships, whatever.
Yeah. When you're on the stand and playing this music, there is a collaborative spirit that exists. It goes beyond all the other things, you know, that really is the channel for the way that the communication works. Now, anything that's not working in towards that end is going to pull it apart. It's not going to work. And so it really becomes, and playing jazz is a very giving thing. And so, and there's a joy in that as well. And so it's wonderful that you're on the bandstand with your brother or your wife and you know, sharing, you know, not only the fun things in the world that you know, wives and husbands and brothers do together, but also this way of sharing the music. So it works a treat.
And do you think that being brothers, there's any deeper intuition between you and James that isn't there possibly with other artists when it comes to improvising?
I suppose so, just from a purely, it'd be simply because of the amount of time we've played together. And people say they're brothers in music. I've seen other musicians that have spent their lives, who aren't blood brothers, who've spent their lives playing together, have that same experience. So it's not necessarily anything to do with genetics but you know, if you were growing up through your early teen years and sitting down with someone and listening to Errol Garner and Oscar Peterson and Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis and everybody and going through all of the same things, naturally you're going to have, you know, and whether it's your brother or an uncle or just the guy next door, you know, I mean, you would have that. And so that's why it exists, you know, it's just that purely the amount of time.
But also, so sometimes people just feel that intuitively, and that's why bands lock in. You know, when I was in Adelaide, I didn't really have a set band for a long time, and I would book different musicians. But you would come across the right combination. That's something that John and I found together, is that we feel where the beat is in the same place, whereas a particular bass player that I used to work with, he felt it very differently to where I did and to where some of the drummers were. It wasn't that he was wrong, it was just different
interpretation.
And it just didn't lock in necessarily. So even though we've only been working together for 3 and a bit years, it hasn't taken that lifetime of playing together. It's just taken an intuitiveness that
I think we're old souls, actually, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, how did you come to jazz, Jackie?
My dad was a musician, so I grew up around music. He was director of music for the Air Force out at Richmond, and so I grew up out at Hawkesbury. And then they retired and moved to Adelaide, and I wanted to study, so I moved to Adelaide, and I sort of fell into a music course there that led me into doing a Bachelor of Music in Jazz Voice at Adelaide Conservatorium, and just developed a career there. And I just started to come back to Sydney to visit friends and what have you, and I happened to meet Barry Crook, who's a radio announcer as well, and had been managing other bands over the years. And I met him through a mutual friend, and he knew I was serious about what I did before he'd heard me sing. And he said, I'm going to organise a gig for you, and you come over every now and then. And so a couple of weeks later, he rang me up and he said, oh, I've booked you a gig and I've booked you a band. And I said, oh, well, you know, who's the band? And he said, oh, John Morrison. Have you heard of him? I said, yeah, I think I might have. And so it was a really good start to gigging in Sydney. And I would come over every 4 months or so, and Barry would get something organised for me. And so that's how I got back into the Sydney scene. But I'd been working in Adelaide for 17 years, long time.
It's called Mood Swings, the overall title of the album. And some very interesting and diverse tracks on the album.
Hence the title.
Now, the Steve Coon song on the album, Saga of Harrison Crabfeathers. Now, that's an interesting choice.
My favourite.
Goes back to 1972 when he wrote that.
Yeah.
How did you discover this one?
When I was at uni, there was what was called the real book.
The real book, yeah.
The real book. And for a long time, that was really all we had as a book of jazz tunes. Now there's actually quite a lot out. This was the early 90s, and this was a book that had been put together by one of the jazz colleges in America and had made its way to Australia. And so I would just work my way through this book, and it was one of those that I came across, and I'd always loved it. I'd only ever heard one recording of it, and that was Steve Coon. Had never heard any others, and it just fascinated me, the lyrics, and the melody was just so haunting, and I really loved it.
Sad song.
It's very sad, and I think it can mean different things to different people, depending on how they interpret the lyrics.
John, I've seen you working with children with disabilities here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. You obviously get a great deal of satisfaction out of education and spreading the musical love. You must have been in many situations, but can you give me an example of when you felt that satisfaction of working with and educating children?
Yeah, I'm very, very lucky that way, Frank. I think that children so naturally come to you through music. You know, it's a very simple language in many ways for them. You know, they understand it completely. I think I first latched onto it internationally when I was touring, and we were in a country, I really can't remember where it was, but we were playing outside in a fair, and I remember these kids came up to us, and they were really enjoying the music. They were quite young. They were only 6 or 7, and they just wanted to hang around the front of the band and shake our hand and take our picture, and their parents were there, and we couldn't speak to them, you know what I mean? And it sort of hit me. I was only in my early 20s, and I remember thinking, wow, I can't even say what's your name or anything. They were rattling off in their language, and we were talking, saying, well, we're all, you know, having fun. And you know, the old international language cliche, when you actually feel it like that. And then I later in life, as you say, working with disabled children, I noticed that line of communication was there just the same, you know, because where the children that I'd visited more recently at St. Lucy's had difficulty, you know, communicating with English and all sorts of varied problems, music, you know, would just happen, and their eyes would light up, and you could look at each other and understand everything, you know. So they've got a great program there at St. Lucy's, and they're using percussion, using all sorts of mallet instruments, and it's great for these kids on a number of levels. So I take my drums up there. I do believe music has that treasure in it, and that's what, you know, we all love about it. That's its great gift to humanity, is the way it connects us all, and whether we can speak the same language, or all of a sudden the language of feeling is
it's a common thread.
It's a common thread, and we all have these feelings of hope, of happiness, of despair, of, you know, loss, of grief. They're all common emotions in us, and music is the way to express or experience
that
expression.
It makes you realise how important important music is as part of therapy as well, you know, accidents or brain trauma or anything like that.
Yeah, a lot of people find great solace in it, of course, and so I consider myself fortunate to have that experience. You know, it's not something people say to me, oh, that's really great you do that. I say, no, that's a, you know, it's a wonderful gift that I can experience that, and I love it.
I think, too, a lot of organisations have realised the importance of music in their programs. Like John goes up to Darwin every year and does a little drum group with kids who don't have the best home lives, and they're the first thing they do when they get to school is their teachers give them a hug, they have a sleep because they've maybe been up all night with parents fighting or drinking and things like that, lots of violence in their lives, and so they have that kind of beginning to their school day. They have a wash, they have breakfast and that sort of thing. And so the Smith family put this music program together and they realise how important it is to have something like music for them to express, to express themselves. It's really
great,
important.
Yeah, I enjoy it. We're in the second generation of that now, so that's been going just even for the few short years. And what we decided to do was go for primary school children at first. So we get them at year 4 and 5 and then into 6, because once they go into high school, kids are really then either just fall down the mine shaft into that same behavioural pattern that they're seeing at home. But there's just a moment where they're still clinging to this school life they've set up, these special schools. And so now we've seen the kids going into high school taking the music with them. So we've expanded through the Australian Music Children's Fund, which is here on the North Shore, which is great, which is an organisation which sort of sources musical instruments into these more challenged environments where they can't afford it. Now they've got little bands going. We're taking clarinets up there and trumpets and on it goes. But originally it was just, you know, they said, what can we do? And I said, well, let's get 50 djembes, you know, and we're going to take it. And we did. Dynamic Music got us 50 djembes and we went up there and went nuts. And they loved it. You know, we made a lot of noise. And we learned African welcome songs. You know, some of the kids had Sudanese background and you know, a lot, of course, an Aboriginal culture. We included it all. You know, we took all of that stuff. It didn't matter. I didn't even talk about culturally what the music was. It was us, you know, we're going to make a noise. And so we danced and sang and I performed. It was wonderful, wonderful. But it did make a difference. And through that change, luckily we had a forums up there now where we've got more and more support from, you know, the local government and more from the education department as well. And so they're saying, wow, you guys have kicked some goals here. Let's just push this through further now. And it's great. Again, music, you know, has that magic.
And to the other extreme, we both teach at the annual jazz camp, and John's the artistic director and I run the vocal program there. And so you've got 110 high school age kids who are living and breathing jazz, but they might be the only kid at their school who has any idea who Dizzy Gillespie is or Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that's right.
Something clicks in them and they go, this is where I belong. This is what it's all about. I'm not the outsider. This is cool. And, you know, so many of those kids have gone on to be professional musicians. You know, it's fantastic.
Some of them come to us and are lost in a different way. You know, they're not sort of from that incredibly harsh environment that the young kids from Darwin are in. But you know,
they're not sure where they're fitting in.
They don't fit in. Until they come to camp and you see their face go, oh, well, you guys are all like me. And they're all looking at their iPod, you know, because at school they're hiding their iPod. You know, I've got Carmen McRae. I don't want anyone to see that, you know. And we're going, yes, come to us. Come in the door. So it's like a baptism. I call it the baptism. Once they're baptised in that feeling of, wow, there is this great feeling. And there's people that love your show, that listen to your music, that just find so much in it. And, you know, when it's connecting it all together. You know, we need to see, need to have.
A singer's question now, Jackie. I've heard some singers say they tend not to listen to other singers, preferring to allow their own style naturally develop without any external influences. What's your thought on that? And can you name singers that have influenced your style?
I do listen to a lot of singers. I can't listen to one singer for too long because we are all ear-based as singers. You know, we're just using our ears all the time. It's like picking up an accent. Mm-hmm. And so I do find that if I'm driving along to a gig and I'm listening to Carmen McRae, everything's going to sound like Carmen McRae that day. It's going to be ballsy and with a bit of attitude and that's not such a bad thing, but I really hear it. And I can remember I was driving to a gig and I'd been listening to Dinah Washington. And, man, those seven or eight marriages that she had were coming right through me that day.
Don't get any ideas, darling.
And so I have to be really careful. And so I tend to listen on shuffle, you know, so I listen to lots of varied things. I do find the hardest thing for musicians, especially when we're teaching as well, sometimes listening to music is work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to listen to something else to relax.
Yes. Yes.
And so, you know, your ears have to go somewhere else to be enjoyable.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And it's a really difficult thing because it's nice to just be able to switch off and just have music in the background. But I can't do that. If I'm listening to music, I'm listening. And, yeah, you want to be able to switch off. And the songs that I've recorded, two of them, and they came in dreams. I actually woke up in the middle of the night and I had to write down the lyrics and that sort of thing. And I've written plays and stories and film scripts, and I used to do film production at uni, and that was the same thing. Yep. I would go to bed thinking about the project, but I would actually dream it, and then I'd wake up and write it down. So when I'm awake, I can't think of a bloody thing.
Oh. But you studied with Mark Murphy.
Yes.
For a brief period?
Lovely Mark, he's not well.
Isn't he?
No, he's got Alzheimer's.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
He's in a home now. He's living in an actor's home.
Oh.
So it's where, you know, they can get assisted living. And he's still been performing, well, I don't know if now, but certainly as of a few months ago, there was a lot of special awards nights in his honour.
Mm-hmm.
And because they all knew that within this next year, it's his last year of really knowing where he is, who he is, and what he is. And
isn't that sad?
Yeah, it's really sad because vocally he still sounds amazing.
I wanted to ask you if there was one thing that you learnt from Mark Murphy.
Breathing.
Yep.
Breathing. Oh, my God, yeah. I could never emulate his style. He's just so amazing in his phrasing and very, he just had his own sound and own placement and that sort of thing. But in terms of technique, he turned my whole technique around by changing how I breathed and getting me to breathe through my nose and understanding more about yoga techniques in breathing. When I started studying with him, I was doing my recital at the end of my degree, and I was on stage and I was a bit nervous because it was my big end of year thing, and I had just finished singing a song and I felt like I had sung it while running around an oval. I was really quite puff, and I thought, well, it wasn't that strenuous, but it was nerves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, he addressed that, and he said, you know, if you were breathing in more through your nose, and he breathes through his nose 100% of the time, which I don't do. I sort of tend to use a sort of a mixture of the two. But it really did make me find a lot more support and that kind of thing. He was a very tough teacher. He absolutely laid it on the table and said, you know, that was crap, and, you know, except he's American, so he used more interesting terms. But but he would call a spade a spade. Mm. And really, you certainly didn't come out of his lessons going, wow, I'm fabulous. You came out thinking, I need to go
to
and rethink
working
my whole life. Yeah, so no, I am really sad that he's not having a great final part of his life. Yeah. And send him lots of good vibes.
John, you mentioned on your website, jazz is much more than just an art form. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Oh, God, you got 3 days?
Briefly.
You know, the whole idea of that came out of the way we like to pigeonhole music, you know. And I, what I sort of found, particularly in jazz, is that, you know, people have their type of jazz they like. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. I say to people who say, I don't like jazz, well, you probably haven't heard a jazz that you like. Because jazz is not a what, it's a how. It's a way of playing, you know, an improvised moment. And everybody loves improvised moments. You know, we watch, we tend to find humour in them and all sorts of things. And we find humour in jazz same way, so people don't necessarily look for it. And so, you know, but even articulate and learned jazz scholars, well, let's call them that, still try to say, well, now this is from this and that goes over there, and this is art music and that's this is, you know, and and so I seen art form and I thought, yeah, okay, there's another pigeonhole. I can just make it that, you know. And so I've decided, because of, you know, I felt this great spiritual attachment to music that I felt, that I wasn't going to just say it was this. It was like, it's sort of the same way of saying, you know, with people who have a faith or a belief, you know, that this is, mine's right and yours is wrong. And, you know, and I subscribe to a lot of that either at all. So I feel that just an art form, you know, what could be more? I mean, it's more than an art form. It's much more. Kenny Werner.
And he was saying about how jazz has become this art form because you can get a degree in it. And you're saying, in 20 years' time, are you going to be able to get a degree in rap and be analysing your rap lyrics? And, you know, you get your report back and it says, you know, I don't think these were quite your most aggressive lyrics, you know, so far. And
I guess anything's possible.
So interesting that, you know, as time goes on, are we going to be, because you go to uni to study music and you tend to be choosing classical or jazz. And so what's the next
progression from that
you will go to study?
I suppose that my comment, I did say it originally inside jazz pedagogy, you know, that, you know, calling jazz just an art form, I was saying, well, hang on, if it can be more than an art form, it can be anything, you know. I mean, let's not put any sort of description on it at all.
Yes.
Because I think that, you know, music has that promise of saying more than words do. So it was meant to provoke the question that you asked me, you know, why do you say that?
An art form makes it sound like it's not there for the masses, that it's there for people who achieve a degree or you know, people who can afford a nice bottle of Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah,
but it's really
puts it into a sophisticated sort of mould.
Yeah, yeah, when you consider that most of the jazz musicians that I went to see when I was travelling around the States couldn't read a note of music, you realise that it's all about singing from,
the
playing
feel,
from
the
heart,
feeling,
and feeling, being intuitive.
And going back, I suppose, to, you know, the point about when I'm playing for autistic children, they don't know or judge art at all. They just know the moment, you know, that's what's actually happening. So it's more than that then, isn't it? You know, I've always found difficulty in the competition, you know, that music has. And some people that might know that I'm an adjudicator, which is really interesting, but I do stand up loudly and say, you know, when I'm adjudicator, I found this is the way to do it and say, this is all wrong. You know, well, and I try and bring the idea that, you know, to say on a technical level, you can say this has merit or this needs work or whatever, and in sense of encouragement. But I've never felt comfortable about, you know, making a judgment in an art sense, if you like, about what's good and what's bad. I think that's everyone. You know, it's like saying I don't like Cocoa Pops and someone else likes Fruit Loops.
Yeah.
It always comes back to food, doesn't it? One way or another in our family.
I've got one more question for you, Jackie, and there will be listeners, I'm sure, have seen John perform and heard him on the radio here many occasions. They might feel as though they know him very well, but they probably don't know him at all. Now, we know he's a pilot and loves flying, but what is something that we don't know about John?
Oh, dear.
Is there any oddities or idiosyncrasies that you'd like to share with us?
Again, I need a few days.
Frank, how did you get that? Where did you get that idea from? He's not making this up, everybody.
Well,
He planned it. Look at him, grinning away over there. Oh, yeah,
I think the only thing I can say is that despite all the oddities, I married him.
Oh.
And so they mustn't be all that bad.
Oh,
but
what a save.
Thanks very much, John.
Oh,
and
thank
thanks
you,
very
darling.
Much, Jackie.
Thank you, darling. Thank you.